Well, the World Mysteries website reports that skulls are humanity's foremost symbol of death and a powerful icon in the visual vocabularies of cultures all over the globe. 13 crystal skulls of apparently ancient origin have been found in parts of Mexico, Central America, and South America, comprising one of the most fascinating subjects of 20th century archaeology. These skulls, found near the ancient ruins of Mayan and Aztec civilizations, with some evidence linking the skulls with past civilizations in Peru, are a mystery as profound as the pyramids of Egypt, the Nazca lines of Peru, or Stonehenge. Some of the skulls are believed to be between 5,000 and 36,000 years old, and many indigenous people speak of their remarkable magical and healing properties, but nobody really knows where they came from or what they were used for. Were they left behind after the destruction of a previous world, such as Atlantis? Are they simply ingenious modern fakes, or can they really enable us to see deeply into the past and maybe predict the future? Much research is currently being done on the skulls. However, their origin is still a baffling mystery. They seem to defy logic. Everything that is known about the cutting of the stones indicates that the skulls should have been shattered, fractured, or fallen apart when carved. That did not happen. Up next, a series of special guests on crystal skulls. Cece Stevens stays with us for the full program. And she's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Cece Stevens grew up surrounded with interests in astrology and UFOs. She is adept in astrology, numerology, biomagnetic healing as well, neurolinguistic healing and dowsing. Cece has been used by the police department to help solve crimes as well as used by ranchers to locate water. She's also the co-creator of the Crystal Skull Festival's World Mysteries. Cece Stevens here on Coast to Coast. Cece, how are you?
I'm doing fantastic, George. Thank you for having me on.
Good to have you with us. Tell me about your involvement with crystal skulls. These skulls have fascinated me since I was a kid, but tell me about your involvement.
Well, I tell you, I just got involved with these back in 2008, is what I've been fascinated by them, and following around trying to catch up to the Mitchell Hedges skull. And it kept eluding me. And finally, I got around to where I was able to go in and see the skull and spend some time with it. And that was in April, and then again in June. And then in September, all these skulls started showing up. I ended up with a total of 13 of them that I have. Bob was the first one that I acquired. And Bob is the skull of wishes. And I say that because anytime anybody is asked ask the wish of Bob, they've been granted. And he doesn't like just throw it out there and there it is. But he shows the way. And that's what I believe on the skulls is they're transmitters and receivers. And so he's picking up that information that you're wanting and then transmitting it to you as to the way to find that roadway to get you to where you're wanting what you're needing, what you're looking for.
The Mitchell Hedges skull was found in 1927 in British Honduras. It was a baffling artifact. The jaw moves, and it was brought into prominence, of course, by British explorer Mitchell Hedges. And he claimed that his daughter unearthed it in 1924, as a matter of fact, on an expedition. The 13 skulls that we have talked about primarily, are there more than, or just these?
You know, there are plenty of skulls that are out there. And Don Alejandro has mentioned that there's 52 different skulls. Whereas Sandra Bowen, a skull researcher, has mentioned that there's 36 skulls. You know, that's a good question.
And some, obviously, are frauds. We just don't know.
You know, here's something that when I have spoken on the skulls and it's asked, is it an ancient skull? Is it an Atlantean skull? Is it, you know, and my theory on it, all skulls that are made from crystals, the crystals are millions of years old, and then they're carved. So where does the dating come in? How does one know that you have a skull, but could that crystal have not been from back in that time and used as it was and then later down the road carved into a skull itself?
Cece, one of the things that baffles people, and I just mentioned it, was the fact that these skulls should have been shattered, fractured. They should have fallen apart when they were being carved. They didn't. How come? Somebody knew something, or they had some kind of equipment that we just don't have.
True. As to why they didn't fracture, that is a good question. My fascination is I have been put into a situation of hearing an inner voice that said, you need to put this together. I saw the skull, I experienced the others came in, and then I was like, okay, now we're done in collecting these skulls. And then I had a dream, and it was about 999, and I ran into a friend who had had the same experience of a 999. And I hadn't seen him in probably 20 years, the same amount of time that I'd started this campaign of trying to find the Mitchell Hedges skull. And so I looked at him, I said, well, if you've had this and I've had this, you know, it gave us both the chills. This is something we need to do. So we formed Oracle Productions LLC, Kendall Ray Morgan was my partner, and we went out, and in 6 weeks, we've put this entire event together.
Are you obsessed with these skulls? There are a lot of people, Cece, who are.
I'm not obsessed, but I'm very curious. And I am, in the experiences that I've had with each one that I've seen, and what I've picked up, I will say that I have, after having experienced them, I've gone home and had some pretty fascinating dreams.
Tell me about the skull Bob that you were talking about.
Bob is he's very clear. He's got a rainbow to the back of his head. He stands approximately 5.5 inches tall, about 6 pounds, I believe he is. And I bought him at the gym show, and understand he's from Brazil.
Can I ask you how much you had to pay for it?
I have no problem with that because I bought it wholesale, and I only paid $400 on Bob.
Wholesale. Bob was wholesale.
Huh? Right. Let me tell you how I, after gone through the Mitchell Hedges skull,
yeah,
and what got me to come about going with Bob was I'd gone up to the show, gone with my sister, and said, let's take the shuttle bus to the other one. Just something wanted me to go in that direction. She's like, okay, so we went. And I said, she says, where do you want to go? I said, I don't know. I just, let's get, grab the bus and go. So we did. And I was like, you know, you're trying to find something. You're hungry for something in the kitchen, but you don't know what. So you start digging through everything, trying to figure it out what it is you're hungry for.
And you start eating everything.
Yeah, you're eating everything. You're right. And then the next thing, you're like, why'd I do that?
Yeah.
When all you really wanted was a glass of water. And so this is the way I was with the bus, as I went out and we, you know, the shuttle bus, we got on that, and then we got to the Days Inn and got off and walked around, and I just started moving. And my sister's telling me, slow down, let's look around. No, something down here.
You felt it, didn't you?
I did. I was being called. And it was something I had not experienced before. I was flat being called. And I went down, and then, boop, my feet just came to a stop, and I looked to the right, and there was Bob looking at me. It was like he literally jumped out and said, here I am. And I walked in, and I wouldn't spend the money to George to go out and buy a skull. Honestly, wouldn't, not that much at least.
Right.
And it was like, I got to have him. How do you want me to pay this? How do I do this? And so I went to use my plastic, and it needed to be a different kind. It was like, great, okay, well, you want cash? Now I've got to go do that. So I'm playing with the ATM machine, and it locks up because you've got to keep drawing out, and it'll only let you go so far.
A couple times. Then the old fraud alert calls you, right?
That's right. Then I've got to call my bank and explain it's not fraud. Somebody's going to go buy that skull. I've got to go get it, and I know it sounds whack. But work with me, and they're like, okay, you're cleared, go ahead and go. And I went back, and I got Bob. And I took him home, and it was like I couldn't get my breath until the transaction was done. And then when it was done, it was like, okay, now why did I do that? And I went home and I sat down with Bob and I looked at him. And that night I went to sleep and I started having these dreams.
What kind of dreams, Cece?
It was opening up intuitive dreams, this deja vu, seeing forward.
That you normally would not have had.
Well, I have dreams like that, but not like this, no. These were more like earth changes kind of dreams.
Okay, and extremely vivid, too, I would
Yeah, and very vivid ones, exactly. And seeing, you know, an earthquake coming up, and then we'd end up having an earthquake or a bad storm rolling in, and there'd be a bad storm. You know, things like that. So it was like opening that center within me. And then with people and going to them and just opening up more to readings with them, of seeing clearer on things. And so people that got around Bob, though, all of them sat down and held him. And when I did a show, UFO Congress last year, and I did a lecture, and I passed Bob around. Some people are real funny, don't touch the skulls.
Were you afraid that? Were you concerned that somebody could drop him?
You know, I really wasn't. I walked along with Bob, and here you go, you can have him. And so, you know, I took him back after they held him, but
it's like having a new baby, and everybody grabs the kid, and you just don't want them to, and all of a sudden 15 people are tossing him, you know, to each other.
Yeah, they're passing around, right. And one of the people that I was with said, oh, you should never let anybody touch a skull. And I says, why? Well, they could put negative bad mojo on him. You don't want to do that.
Interesting.
And I'm thinking, well, okay, but, you know, I don't know if I'd go with that or not. I will see what happens. You know, I'm not feeling that, but okay. And so I went along, and individuals that took him and held him, I had one gentleman that was standing there, held him, and all of a sudden he started weeping. And I'm looking at him trying to figure out, you know, what set him off. And then afterwards he looked at me and said, thank you. Bob released something in me that I've been holding, and I feel relief.
Did he? And he wouldn't explain what that was.
He did, but I don't want to go into it. Other than it was something very personal and painful for him. He needed to let go of.
And it worked.
And it worked for him. And another woman held it, and she saw something. She had a vision, and it was something important for her. So you see, he reacts differently to different people. But one thing that is the consistent: those that have held Bob and made a wish, the wish was granted.
As long as it's not one of those wishes of, you know, trying to make too much money and things like that.
You know what, George? If you wished $1 million on Bob, this is what Bob would do. He would grant you the wish, but he'd show you how to get $1 million, how to make $1 million.
Ah, he wouldn't just hand it to you.
He wouldn't hand it to you. He would say, give you this idea, okay, and there's the way to go with it. Now, I know I've sat down with Bob when I've been in a quandary, and I go over there and I put my hand on him. I'm like, okay, Bob, show me the door. Where is this door that I need to enter? What is it that I'm supposed to be doing? And just like that, it's very clear.
Now, we're going to be talking with others who are caretakers for other skulls. Do you find, Cece, that these skulls all have different properties? So one would be like Bob, more inspirational, another would be something else, and another would be something else, or are they all the same?
I think that each of these skulls, from what I've seen, from what I have experienced and watched, are as individual as you or me or anyone else. Each one of them is their own individual personality.
So they will deliver different forms of energy, I guess, or whatever you call this crystal ripple effect, as you've called it.
Yeah, the crystal ripple effect is it's a little bit different. The ripple effect that I'm looking at is my wish on Bob, what if possibility. The crystals are transmitters and they are receivers, so they can transmit out. And you bring other crystals together, and that's going to create a bigger energy field or a ripple.
Is it possible that these crystal skulls are basically conduits to the universe, to the world of the subconscious, to the world of being able to tap into everyone? Lynn McTaggart calls it the field.
There is a very good point, and I would agree with you on that one. I would say, I would very much so say yes.
Yeah. I mean, I've thought about that theory lately, and it's very possible. that that's what they do.
Mm-hmm.
How old do you think Bob is, if you had to guess?
Well, I met the people that know the carver that made them, and so the crystal that was used, millions of years. But Bob himself is about 5 years old, and interesting enough, the artist that carved him in Brazil is also a shaman. So it was like, well, there's an interesting one. He's an artist. He is a carver, but he's considered a shaman as well. So am I picking up on that energy that was left with Bob? Because I think whoever makes these skulls, they are putting their energy into that skull, and that energy is staying with it, and that's what you're finding.
Did the shaman who made Bob, do mm-hmm. you know if he ever explained how he thought the old crystal skulls, the ones that were 5,000 years old or 36,000 years old, were created, were made?
I don't know. I haven't had a chance to talk to him, but I hope one day that I will be able to meet him. I'd like to thank him for making Bob.
Oh, yeah, I don't blame you.
And at my conference, what I do have is I have invited, I've got a master carver that is going to be speaking as well. He's coming in, and he's going to explain about his carvings, and he's also bringing Hakatar, who is a 350-pound skull. Huge.
That's a pretty big skull.
That is there's a picture of him on the web. It's Leandro de Souza. And he has carved a number of the skulls that are out there now. And he's interesting in the work that he's done and the pieces that he has. He's also going to be at the gym show this year in September. They're showing up there, as well as they're bringing a number of them to the World Mysteries. So anybody that's wanting to buy their skull, to find their skull, they can also go there to pick one up if they're wanting.
You don't have to give $400, do we?
Yeah, well, yeah. Now we do have Quetzalcoatl. You can always buy a raffle ticket and win Quetzalcoatl. Quetzalcoatl is another one that called to me. And I went in and found him, and he's a lace agate, and he's the most beautiful. And I said, I've got to have him, and I got him, and I brought him home, and I looked at him. I'm not going to send this to the raffle. This one I'm keeping. I'll find one of my others. And then it was like about 2 days later, he was sitting with Bob, and Quetzalcoatl sits there, and he's like keeping tabs on me in the kitchen. And it was like all of a sudden I just had this feeling from him that said, no, I'm not yours. I'm someone else's. You have to let go. And it was like I just got this chill when I experienced that. And I was able to let go, and I thought, no, you're right. You're there for someone else. You need to heal someone. And by me holding on to you, I am stopping the flow of energy, which is not what I'm wanting to do. And so I let it go, and it's like, okay, I let it go. I put you to the web, and I've put it out there, and now that person that is supposed to be there for Quetzalcoatl will be there, and they'll buy their ticket and spend $5, and they'll win them.
Up next, we're going to be talking with Sherry Whitfield Merrill. She is the caretaker for a crystal skull called Synergy, and we're going to talk with her about that on Coast to Coast AM when we come right back. Sherry Whitfield Merrill is Synergy. Now, that's another crystal skull's current caretaker. Her focus is on the spiritual awareness and development, as well as the empowerment and validation of the individual. Sherry and Synergy work as a team, rooted to build a group vibration that encompasses compassion and an ever-increasing ability to give and receive love. Additionally, she has collaborated with scientific researchers at the university level, working to understand subtle energies and states of consciousness. Cece stays with us. Sherry's with us now. Hi, Sherry. How are you?
Hi, George. I'm great.
Good. Now, tell me about Synergy. How did you get Synergy, and tell me about it?
Okay, well, Synergy was given to me out of the blue by a man that I barely knew. I'd been doing a little bit of business with him. It was kind of a strange situation how I ran into him, and I wouldn't normally have even met him. He'd had the skull for about 20 years, and, of course, I saw it when I was talking to him. I heard a lot of people asking him if it was for sale, if they could touch it, if they could pick it up. And he always said, no, it's not for sale. Yes, you can touch it. No, you can't pick it up. But frankly, I didn't think it had anything to do with me whatsoever. I was involved in and interested in angels, huh. Not crystal skulls. And I, you know, what does a crystal skull and angels have to do with one another? So I casually asked him, what's the story on that thing? And he picked it up, and he shoved it right at me. And it shocked me so much that I took a step back and actually sat down and ended up with it on my lap. And I was really, really worried that I was going to drop it because it weighs about 15 and a half pounds.
That's pretty good size. That's more than double what Bob weighs, right?
Well, it's a big one, yeah. And I looked at it, and I looked at him, and I said, take it back. You know, if I drop this, I can't pay for this. You know, please take it back. And I was trying to get up and give it to him. And I looked at it, and in the cheekbone, it's a very detailed carving. Anthropologists have looked at it, forensic people, and said that it was carved using a real skull as a model. It has slightly crooked nose, the eyes are slightly offset, and the cheekbone has another crystal growing right through it. That's called an intercepted crystal. And I looked at it, and I thought, what? How did somebody carve this? Because it was basically the width of the cheekbone. And now I know some different Mayan priestess and shamans, and they say that when I looked into that cheekbone, into that small little crystal growing through it,
yeah,
that's when the skull got me. They say that's called the portal into the skull.
What do you think of these crystal skulls, Sherry? I mean, do some of them, like you said, you started off talking about angels and going in that direction. Are they all, positive energy, or do some of them flow negative energy? Are some of these skulls evil?
Well, I think anything can be used for evil. I mean, just look around us. We can see that clearly. But I don't think any of them were ever originally, probably weren't carved to be evil. And it's extremely rare to find one. And I have my hands on now hundreds of thousands of skulls every year. And it's very rare that I see one that's icky. It's just not that common. The people that are using them are usually drawn to ones that have a certain level of vibration. Now, this is a theory a scientist told me. The guy works with a lot of electromagnetic interference work, and he said, you notice how it's the low-energy ones that weren't carved very well, that don't really vibrate that much. They're the ones that seem to be kind of icky. Now, if one is carved correctly, they do certain things that all researchers agree on. They focus energy, reflect it,
mm-hmm.
refract it, attune it, transmit it, transform it, store it, amplify it, and some say that the old ones act as a witness.
Well, we've seen what they used to do for radio.
Oh, sure.
You know what? There's no reason why it couldn't work this way, too. What do you think the significance of these crystal skulls are? What do you think the purpose of their existence might
be?
Well,
it turns out that Synergy was with a tribe that was that still exists and is down off the coast of Australia. And they say that this particular crystal skull was carved as a prayer and as a receptacle to hold the information or libraries, if you will, from 13 different solar systems. The significance. Well, you know, Dr. Chet Snow, I know you've had on before, says that he thinks that in the primal part of our brains, we really react to the shape of a skull. And I think that's true. People have reactions to them. Just like Cece said, some people don't want to hold the skull. They're afraid to touch it.
I know some people who have little skulls as keychains, and they keep them in their pocket or in a purse or something for energy and things like that.
Right, right. I think that they're tools of spiritual awareness. Now, I told you they do certain things. They have the potential to, you know, let's just take a few of them. Amplify energy, reflect energy. Now, if you've got something and it does this, what kind of tool would you have? I mean, how many hours of psychotherapy might you save yourself if you're able to bring the thing that you are, wondering what's blocking you in your life, if you could bring it into your consciousness and then focus on it?
How old do you think Synergy is?
Well, the tribe says that it came from Lemuria. So,
really?
That is a completely different energy than Atlantean. And,
Is Synergy one of these 13 crystal skulls we hear so much about?
Well, just like many of the Mayans say, I deal with a lot of different native people because of Synergy. They come to see the skull. And the tribe that had Synergy says there were 52, not 13, that they were used most commonly in groups of between 7 and 13. But the most common was 13. So I don't know. Was Synergy one of the original 13? I think that would be quite a statement to make. Was it one of an original group of South Pacific or Lemurian skulls? Yeah, I think so. The tribe still has two other crystal skulls in its possession that are the same type of carving, same age.
Sherry, tell me how you use Synergy.
Well, I personally use it for my own spiritual awareness, for my own spiritual growth. I do meditate with the skull. I talk to it. I laugh with it. Cece and you were talking about skulls having different quality, and she's calling Bob the skull of wishes. Well, I would say that Synergy's a skull of joy and laughter, and I really feel it's brought a lot of joy and peace into my life. And so I personally use it so that I'd be able to be a happier and more peaceful person.
How do you know the skull is not representative of you, of your personality?
Well, I don't. They do reflect energy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's something that is quite intriguing to watch when I go to events. And I've said on occasion that, some people feel that their skulls have a powerful spirit in them, and perhaps that's true. But perhaps that powerful spirit that you see is you.
Do you get a lot of people who tell you that they have skulls from ancient times?
Oh, sure. If there were that many ancient skulls, well, why didn't they show up before now? I don't know. I don't editorialize on which one I think might be ancient. I mean, everybody has their opinions. I don't think that there's any way to really know. You mentioned, how did they make them, tool marks? Well, Flor de Mayo, a Mayan priestess, and she's the real thing. She's one of the most famous, I guess, crystal skull workers in the world. And she, along with a number of other native people I've met, say that there is a plant sap or juice that, when mixed up correctly, will smooth crystal. I don't think we know anything about how they were made. I don't think we can really judge how old they are just on appearance, because a lot of them that were found in the 1800s, just like antique tables, were touched up a bit if they felt that, they could get more money if they looked nicer. No, I think we have to judge each one individually for ourselves. How do they affect us?
True. Now, in Synergy's case, is it very smooth, or are there any jagged marks?
No, very smooth. The closest skull that's in public that, if you look at the way that it was carved, would be the skull called E.T. in Holland, owned by Yoki van Dieten. And when you put the skulls together, they fit next to each other on a curve that's rather interesting. You put them jaw to jaw, and there's a little cleft in the chin. So, no, this one, it's very unusual. I haven't seen anything carved like it, although the tribe says that they do have the twin of Synergy. And they've done some rather spooky things with me, following me around and seem to know what I'm doing. They claim that they can see what I'm doing through the twin of Synergy. But I guess that's another story.
Tell me about that.
Well, I was I had the skull for a few years, and I got this message to go to Glastonbury, England. I didn't know anybody in England.
Just out of the blue.
Yeah, and I thought, went and told my husband, hey, yes, I'm going to Glastonbury. He's like, where's that? And I said, well, it's somewhere in England. I think it had something to do with King Arthur. I don't know why, but it was a really strong feeling I had to go. So I go there. I'm waiting around. This lady organized a whole bunch of different workshops and things for me over there. They weren't really well attended. I wasn't well known. We didn't do any publicity. So I'm just sitting in this little, kind of big hall, actually, waiting around. And this man walks in, and he tells me this incredible story that he represents this tribe down in the South Pacific. And I listened to him, and I watched him, and I thought, man, this guy's the best con artist I've ever met. Or he's crazy, or maybe it's real. And I really, really thought that he was a bit delusional, frankly. I liked him. He was really nice, but it was incredible what he was telling me, that when the skull was given to me, the guy's name by coincidence was George. And George said to me, I said, well, what's the history of it? He told me some stuff. He said it came across the Pacific in reed canoes, and it went to the Hawaiian Islands. And from there it went to Easter Island, which was a gathering place. And then it went to the northern Andes, to the people of the sky, the warriors of the clouds, and so on. He said a few more things. Okay, so I didn't tell anybody because I thought it sounded like a movie. It didn't sound like real life. And yeah. I thought, who could prove reed canoes? You know, I'm thinking little kayak type things. I thought, no, that's absurd. Well, this guy in Glastonbury tells me that he came all this way just to see the skull, to see if it was the skull that this tribe had sent across the Pacific in reed canoes.
Hmm.
And I was totally
flabbergasted.
Stunned.
Yeah.
I mean, what would you think? I hadn't told anybody but my close family and friends. There was nothing published. I'm not a famous person. I'm pretty simple. And this guy comes out of nowhere and, tells me this story. And as time went on, it turns out, wow, there is some record of the skull being in the Hawaiian Islands. And in fact, there is a cave in the Hawaiian Islands. It's a secret cave. It's tended by kahunas, and it's called the Cave of the Ancestors. And in that cave is one of the reed canoes with the front cut off, and there are 7 bone skulls which directly relate back to that tribe in the South Pacific. That tribe keeps the bone skulls of all of their important shamans and chiefs. They keep it in these sacred caves along with the Twin of Synergy. And so here in the Hawaiian Islands, there are 7 of the bone skulls from 7 men from that tribe. It just blew my mind.
Have you ever had Synergy, for example, glow at all?
Just by itself?
Yeah.
No, I can't say I have.
Okay.
I've certainly seen it in pictures. It does not photograph consistently. And I have to listen to Coast on the web because it interferes with AM radio.
Well, we don't want that to happen, do we?
No, we don't. It also messes with computer chips and phones and printers and all kinds of electronic things.
What can people do, those people who have to avoid people who claim that these skulls are really ancient, some of them are, they're trying to sell them as ancient ones when they're not?
And if it sounds too good to be true, it's not true. Think about it. Use some common sense. People get so intense about wanting to own one. I didn't pay 1 cent for this skull, and I never would have. It was, I understand that people do get obsessed with them. I see it a lot. And I hear people say, oh, the skull wants to go home with me. But until I hear it, it's not going home with them.
Right.
I think you really need to be careful. There are so many stories, and I've read so many of them. They sound really good, but what do they want from you? I know people that have bought skulls and spent the equivalent of $250,000 for something that I know where it came from. I saw it myself.
They have spent that kind of money?
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty bad.
Tell me about your meditation practices.
Okay. Well, I live up in the mountains in Arizona.
Okay.
Okay, and I like to go down into, I have got about 20 acres up here. We have a dry wash, which usually is not running. And I like to go down in the wash and just sit down there. And sometimes I chant. Sometimes I'm just very quiet. I've been meditating since I was a young child. One of the meditations that I like to do is I think of someone or something that I love. And what I pick is one of my little dogs. Her name's Kiki, and she's an ugly little thing if you really look at her objectively. But to me, she's the queen of my heart. She's a little Chinese crested. So I think about her because she's an uncomplicated little being that loves me about as close to unconditional as possible. So I think about that, and then I pretend that I have I'm hugging that love to my heart, and I allow it to create a golden ball of light that starts to expand. And I let it get bigger and bigger and bigger, and it fills up the wash, and it fills up this little mountain. It goes on out to into Tucson, because I'm about 45 minutes from Tucson. So finally it flows out right out to where you are even, and into the ocean. And it just goes around the whole world. And what it is love, the best that I know what love means. And I'm not sending it into the earth. I'm sending it to the earth and to every person on the earth and every being, every bug, every tree, everything. And I let the earth itself, I let the people and the things on the earth accept whatever they want to. I don't force it. I just allow it. And so that's my favorite meditation that I do at the skull.
And does the synergy travel wherever you go?
Yeah, we never leave the skull alone. George was pretty clear about don't leave the skull alone, and we don't leave the skull alone. And when I go someplace, I travel with it. I got some advice, actually, from Joanne Parks on how to get customs papers for synergy, and I went down and I got them, and I've taken it to a number of places around the world.
All right. Well, Sherry, thank you for spending the half hour with us. Next hour, two more separate guests will join us, starting with Jane Doherty, who is a psychic medium. So she's next on Coast to Coast AM. Now, Jane Doherty is a psychic medium and the caretaker of Maya, Crystal Skull. The two work together to increase inner awareness and hope for global consciousness as well. Jane does individual seances, ghost investigations, has also worked with the police in several cases. Here's Jane Doherty on Coast to Coast. Hey, Jane, how are you?
I'm just fine, thank you.
Good to be with you, and I'm glad you've come along. Tell us about Maya, the skull, and how did it change your appearance?
It seems to have changed. Well, when I got it, it was a milky white with just about a quarter size peak into it. I went to the solar initiation ceremonies at Chichen Itza and the other sacred sites in 1995. And once I was there was the first time we actually saw it changing in appearance. It cleared. The milky white began to clear. And then there were two other occasions where people holding the skull and concentrating and working with it, again, more of it cleared. And then I was on a lecture tour in Chicago, and I think that was, to me, the most remarkable, because as this man was holding it, we actually witnessed smoke coming right out from it, and then it's clear except for the bottom now. So almost the whole top is crystal clear.
What do you think accounted for the change? Why would it happen?
I think that it was part of the reactivation of the sacred sites mm-hmm. that actually reactivated Maya. And I also think it symbolizes the evolution of consciousness or where we're going. And also, for me personally, I feel that I think as it clears more, there's more energy that's going to come from it. So I think even that is something. Because when I first started to work with it, it scared me because it actually moved on my dresser as I tried to put energy above it.
Really? Just kind of like shifted away or what?
Yes, it started to actually just move on my dresser. And it scared me because I didn't know, like, whoa, what is this? And so I think just that, I think every level that we get to, it's a evolution. For personally, and I think it's showing something about humanity.
What do you think all these crystal skulls are? What is the purpose?
Oh, I think I think there's a couple of purposes to it. I think the major thing is it's symbolizing the consciousness of man. I feel that there is a healing aspect going on. I think it's to change people's thoughts or bring healing. And I actually think they're connected to UFOs, extraterrestrials, and that they're almost a monitoring device, but that's how the extraterrestrials are monitoring us. And I think it's almost symbolic of the more people tune into this, the more people become aware of it, they realize we're ready.
Are you saying that you think the ETs brought these skulls down to the planet?
I don't know if they brought them. They may have been here at one time, and that's where they were made, or the actual crystal. But I think it's some sort of a device that helps to monitor us. Because since it came into my possession, I've had UFO experiences.
Interesting. But you did not have this before.
Oh, no. And in fact, it seems as though once it came into my life, I was forced to do psychic readings, and it was immediately after I had a UFO encounter. And there have been times that I'll take the skull and, you know, psychically I'm thinking, gee, it's been a long time since I've seen something. And then I have another experience.
And you do not feel threatened at all by these skulls in the least?
Not in the least. The energy of Maya is very loving, and I'm not threatened at all by it. And, in fact, I use it as a protection. And I actually, since 1995, when I went to Mexico and to the reactivation ceremonies, I've used the skull as a way of bringing in God's energy into me as protection, and then sending it out to people in the world and the earth.
Tell me about the Crystal Skulls trip to Janesville, Wisconsin. What was that all about?
Okay, what happened is I had heard about the white buffalo being born. Actually, it's 15 years ago on August 20th, 1994. The white buffalo was born. And it was supposed to fulfill a Lakota Sioux prophecy that it would signify a new period of hope and renewal, and that it promised that there would be unity among people. So I became curious because I had had some information given to me in the beginning of 1996 that seemed to go along with this prophecy. So I wanted to go there to hold the skull in front of the white buffalo. And so what happened when I went, it was a very cold day in March, mm-hmm. and I held Maya in front of the white buffalo and tried to get her attention, and I did. The buffalo was looking right at me, and I closed my eyes, and I began to try to communicate. And I was asking, you know, is this truth, the prophecy that you're supposed to fulfill, what I've been being told? And at that, my hands got very hot. My daughter and her friend were with me, and they screamed. The skull turned pink. So I got my sign. I was asking for a sign.
All right, let's go back to this ET thought, because mm-hmm. this is unusual. I haven't heard this before. And tell me about the rationale behind it. If this is true, mm-hmm. if ETs have created them or have somehow influenced them, what's their purpose? What are they? Are they spying on us, maybe?
Spying in a good way. I don't feel that the negatives can infiltrate us anymore. There's been a period of change. So when I say
spying, on the planet or with individuals or what?
Both.
Okay.
And I feel what they're doing, it's a symbol, a signal that we would be ready for transformation, that we would be ready for unity again. And perhaps they're coming. We will be able to accept them.
Are we ready?
I think we're getting there.
Are we there yet?
I think a lot of us are. I'm sure everyone that listens to you definitely.
Yeah, they are. They are, but not enough of us.
No, not enough.
Tell me about your psychic mediumship and how you use the skulls.
I use them, and actually in my readings, I will hold a person's hand, and Maya will be present, and I hold a smaller skull, and I actually will finger it. And what happens is somehow I think it gives me more information, and it also pulsates at times to the person whose hand I'm holding, and they'll feel it. And there's like a healing energy or something is going on where their energy is being opened up, even though they don't realize it.
Jen, I've got to ask you, because prophecy has been so important in your life, what you see for the future, do you do that? Do you make predictions?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, I do.
I might as well take advantage of you being on the show. What's out there?
Okay. I do feel that, you know, the talk about 2012 being the end of the world and things like that is not true. I feel that it's going to, I mean, we're going to wake up the next day, we're going to still be here. But I think on a spiritual level, a consciousness, there's going to be a transformation. We're going to have the hurricanes, the things that are going on now.
We always have.
Yeah, we always have. And sometimes it's greater than other times. But I think there is balance coming to the earth that we're all trying to help bring about. And I think we're going to see that. I think more knowledge, more information, I think more UFO contact or experiences. There's hope for us.
Well, yeah, I believe that too. But I think it's going to be a bumpy road to get there.
Yes.
Very bumpy.
Yes, there definitely is. And, you know, what has been told to me is that some of the things that are in all the sacred texts, including the Bible, that, you know, the earthquakes, all of this that's going on, some of that has to go on in order to prepare people to want to be, in essence, saved or want the transformation.
Well, that explain that.
Well, I feel that what that means is that, you know, there is all of this in the Bible as far as the earthquakes, all the different things that are going on in other sacred texts.
Well, we'll just talk about Book of Revelation, for example. I mean,
right.
If you look at that, it's all seems to be happening.
Yes, it does. But what has been told to me back in 1996, which was what prompted me to go to the White Buffalo, is that there would not be the end of the world. We would have things going on that would make people think it was going to be the end of the world. But it's in preparation for what's coming. And so that we would want the change.
Will we be ready?
I think so. I really and truly feel that there are more and more people becoming ready. And if you can go back to 1996, as I can, and see the change and difference in people, if you look out there are people that are becoming nicer and more enlightened and spiritually aware and loving. And you also have a lot of people doing the opposite. And I think at some level, we're already experiencing the change where people are making a decision on a subconscious level between light and dark.
Well, there's no question, I think, that if people truly are conscious in a big way and they understand consciousness, that they can change outcomes. You know, we do it quite often. This, you know, Fridays, we do it for people's health. We do it on events when people try to tap in cosmically together. And Jane, it seems to work.
Yes, it does. It definitely does. Because, I mean, I've done it. Usually when I do a lecture, I will do a demonstration with dowsing rods to show the power of thought. So people realize that you do have some control of your destiny. Your thoughts influence things. And you can make a difference.
You work with some police departments still?
Yes. Not recently, but I have.
Do you go to them or do they come to you?
No, they come to me.
All right. Give me an example. Just, I know you can't be too specific, but just give me a broad example.
Okay.
What would happen?
They contacted me for a case where they were trying to determine who had murdered this woman. They thought it was the son, but not sure. But, of course, they'll come to me. They won't tell me anything. What they do is take me to the crime scene.
They take you to the scene. All right. Mm-hmm. So if the woman was killed, let's say, in her house, you go into this house.
Yes. Okay. They'll take me to the crime scene, tell me nothing, and I just have to tell them whatever it is I am receiving.
You get these impressions?
Yes. And I will, you know, give them the impressions, and, you know, they all look at each other type of thing with their eyes, and then they'll tell me what's happened. At any rate, I will at least be able to infirm what they have been feeling, and I'll give them details, and they'll go further.
Do you ever have to testify in court on their behalf?
No, I haven't had to do that yet.
Okay, you just pass on the information.
I pass on the information. I've gone in this particular case, and it did turn out to be the son who murdered the mother.
Did you see that? Did you feel that in the house?
Yes. And in fact, you know, I have a very strange thing that happens to me when I'm near any kind of spirit activity.
What happens?
Whether it's a seance or a ghost investigation. My stomach actually enlarges. Yes.
All right, funny. Jane.
You can see it on my website.
Come on, you're pregnant and you don't want to tell anybody.
No, no.
Right?
I'm a heavy woman, but you will see. I do ghost tours here with a phenomenon.
Your stomach enlarges?
Yes.
I mean, like, instantly?
Yes. Yes. You could see it on the Lizzie board, on my website with the Lizzie board, and you'll see the image of my stomach just instantly going out when I experienced the spirit of Andrew Borden.
And does it go right back down again?
If I stay in the energy, it won't. It'll stay. I have to step out of the energy.
Like, is it uncomfortable for you?
Yes.
You can feel the pressure?
Oh, absolutely.
How big does it get?
It's been measured by various newspapers here on the East Coast. Anywhere from 3.5 to 5 inches.
Puffs out.
Yes.
So if you have a 30-inch waist,
It
would puff up to 33 or 34 just like that?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes. I do ghost tours, and it's a phenomenon.
I hope you wear loose clothes.
I do. I never wear a button-down shirt either.
Why?
I never know when it can happen if I'm near a spirit.
Why does this happen to you?
I can only explain it because as a psychic, I don't read cards. I feel people's energy, and that translates into images. So I was so used to doing that when I went on my first ghost investigation. The gut area is so fine-tuned, my body, that I react to that spirit energy.
That's fantastic. You've written a book called Awakening the Mystic Gift.
Yes.
What's the message there?
The message is, everybody has the ability. It is not a gift just for one person or a select few. We all have it. I personally feel it's what God gave to all of us for us to have a better life. How I view it is, look at it this way. We all pray to whoever, and we want prayers answered. How many actually ever get answered unless it's a miracle in front of us that we recognize? How many more could be answered if we paid attention to the signs, paid attention to our own intuitiveness?
A lot of people don't.
Exactly. Exactly.
They need to read these signs and then react to it.
Absolutely.
How do they know, though? How do they know that what they're getting is some kind of psychic thing, Jane, or your mind is wandering with your, you know, thinking of all these thoughts, and, you know, they pop in and pop out of your head on a regular basis? How do you know to distinguish?
I think eventually, like through discernment, you get to understand that. But as a quick tip, it's like something that will pop in, something that becomes nagging. Then you've got to connect it to, let's say, your gut to see what you're feeling there. And if it's not your fear, and that's how you get to understand this is a psychic input. One of the biggest things I think I learned, because I taught myself how to be psychic. I developed it. So one of the things in the beginning, I thought, you know, the psychic ability was going to come and hit me on the head and say I'm a psychic insight. It's very subtle. It's just recognizing these signs, recognizing a physical feeling. If you pay attention, some people, when they're getting a psychic insight, will get a tingling sensation in the back of the neck.
Now, has the skull, Maya in this case, has that skull enhanced what you do? How has it helped?
Oh, it's definitely enhanced because it, first of all, protects me. That's one, in energy. I don't get tired. And two, I think it brings energy to me. It's created healing. I've done healings with it. Even a miraculous healing came through, and I paid attention and allowed it to go on. So there, it's enhanced me in many ways.
How do you know you're getting, let's say someone wants to go buy a little one, how do you know you're getting an authentic crystal skull as opposed to, and I mean by, what I mean by authentic is a crystal skull,
right,
as opposed to one of these new, you know, plastics?
It's hard as far as, you know, you've got to know what crystal is. You need to feel the energy of it. Because if you can feel energy coming from it, then it has something to it. And it can be increased as you work with it.
But you, can you tell just by looking at it? If one's
I don't
plastic,
think so.
One's crystal, they're pretty close.
I think you have to pick it up.
And you don't want to drop it.
No. I think, you know, if you pick it up, you can tell. You can start to feel the energy coming from it.
And as far as Maya is concerned, what do? Is it in a case? Do you keep it on a mantle?
It stays by my bed, and it goes with me whenever I'm doing a psychic reading or a seance or
if
whatever.
If you travel, you take it with you?
Yes.
On a plane?
Absolutely.
Do you have to? It goes through the
security? Well, I usually have to take
security.
It out because it usually sets off something. And even in the Boston airport, there was actually a spirit. As I went through, everything went.
What do people say when they see this thing?
They look at me, but then I explain I'm psychic, and they're okay. But in this Massachusetts airport, my stomach went out, and the guards were all like, cause I knew there was a spirit around. So you never know when it can happen to me.
Your closing bill must be outrageous. Jane's website is janedougherty.com, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. When we come back, we will be talking with an Incan medicine man. And then next hour, we'll take your phone calls as well. If you need to email me, that's George at coasttocoastam.com. I'll be right back. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Washan is an Incan medicine man. Since early childhood, he has been taught the way of the medicine man, and now he teaches others. He was introduced by his father in the healing arts, Don Bonifacio, a high Inca priest, keeper of the wisdom and knowledge, and he gave Washan the gift of the ancient sacred Inca healing arts. Washan has been taught how to recognize, connect, and create the magic of healing. And here he is this half hour on Coast to Coast. Hello, Washan. How are you?
Hello. I'm doing great. Thank you.
Good. It's good to have you with us. Tell us about your journey, your mission.
Well, our mission in this time is to bring awareness for people to love and respect our Mother Nature. That's our purpose in this journey, because most people don't realize that Mother Earth is a living cell in the universe. Pachamama, Mother Earth, is alive, and she can feel our connection that we have with her. And in the ancient times, our people used to connect completely with Mother Earth, because we know that our ancient ones, in the ancient times, science, technology, astronomy, math, natural medicine, etc., have been highly developed. And that's what we want to share with people. For example, just looking at the amazing monument they have built, there's so much questions for us. What kind of technology they have used to build all these amazing temples? And also, when we talk about their sacred artifacts, they have carved in crystals, in gold, in silver, and other precious elements. So this is something that we have to really know and realize nowadays.
Well, can tell me about being a medicine man. You know, I've interviewed thousands and thousands of people. I've never interviewed a medicine man before. Tell me, is it like being a shaman? Same thing?
Nowadays, the word shamanism, I guess, is a better way to understand the different ways of the ancient cultures that we are still practicing the ancient medicine. And I believe that this is a path that you have to walk, that you have to practice to connect first of all with yourself. If we believe that we are a divine manifestation, so we must walk and believe on that way. And in our practice, since we are very children, first of all, they connect us with Mother Nature to recognize all the gifts that we have in Mother Nature, all the power of the healing plants, the power of the sacred mountains, the rainbows, the valleys, the desert. Everything has a power here in Mother Nature, and if you learn how to use them, you will have great results in healing disease of mind, body, spirit, and emotions.
How did the ancients, and I'm sure it's been passed on to you now as a modern medicine man, but how did the ancients know what plants to use for what disease or what ailment? I mean, to me, that fascinates me. But how did they know? Was it just, did they experiment?
This has been passed down to us orally, generation after generation, during thousands of years. And of course, nowadays, everything we know, it just comes from the past. And so when I ask myself how my people learned the powers of the healing plants, that's why I say that in the ancient times, technology also was highly developed. And for example, in the Nazca culture, which dates more or less 2,000 years B.C.,
mm-hmm.
time already, the Nazca people, they were already practicing the brain surgeries called trepanations.
It's amazing. Now, as an Incan medicine man, are you at all aware of Mayan prophecy 2012? Did you study that at all?
Those are things that grow together with us. We really don't study. We have to realize that our ancient ones, you know, they were completely developed. And it's very amazing for us now how they have projected to the future. Thousands of years ahead, they have projected themselves, and now everything that we call prophecies, it's taking place. And those are teachings for us that have been surviving orally generation after generation.
It is fascinating to me at how this planet, which I believe is alive, creates plants for medicinal purposes, for the use of medicine, to treat illnesses. It's almost as if, Washon, the planet knows what we need. How does that happen?
Of course, because our planet has consciousness. You know, for example, the rocks, we believe that the stones, they have been witnessing everything in this planet. So it's like a memory that's inside these rocks. And that's why, especially nowadays, a lot of people are realizing all the power that they find in the skulls, in the crystal skulls. We believe that there's stored, in the memory of these rocks, it's stored all our lives. And so in this time, we are living. For us in South America, we call it the Incari, which means the reawakening. So everything is given back to us again in this time of life.
Tell me about your Incan culture. Is it still being practiced?
Very high in the mountains or deep in the jungle, where the civilization didn't get yet, my people are still practicing the ancient way. Now, for example, I was born and raised in Cerro Mayo, which is close to Cusco, and this is more or less 15,000 feet from sea level. So in the place that I was born, I feel I was lucky because in this place you don't find no doctors, no hospitals, no stores, no nothing like that. So this creates a form for us to be really connected with Mother Nature and still survive because we have everything in our hands. Mother Nature has everything we need to survive.
When someone comes to you, let's say they have a fever, what do you do? How do you take care of them?
Well, you know, the fever is the one of the most common things, especially in the children.
Sure.
So for that, the most simple thing, for example, is the egg. The yolk of the egg, you just put it in your mouth to warm it up a little bit, and then you put it on the solar plex in the stomach. And if you don't have that, also the clay, you make like a paste of the clay, and then you put it in the solar plex. And also a very ancient way of healing this is the urine. The human urine, it has a very tremendous power also. So just washing it around the solar plex and then covering it will take away the fever almost instantaneously.
That is incredible. But in terms of real sickness, I mean, people like from the Incan civilizations, did they come down with cancer like we do now and things like that?
Well, completely. You know, diseases have been part of our lives always. It's a challenge for all of us. And we know that in the rainforest, there's millions and millions of healing plants that the native peoples have been using. Maybe nowadays we know about that 2 or 3% of what we have left nowadays. And, you know, my people, they have kept things simple. So they found the easiest way to heal any life-threatening diseases with the plants which they have nowadays in the Red Forest.
Tell me about prophecy. Do you look at prophecy at all as a medicine man?
Well, of course, completely. I believe in the prophecies that our ancient ones, that the native and non-native people have been talking about this time of life. And we can see that everything is taking place completely. And talking about the prophecy, they said that in this time of life, 2 sacred birds were going to join together and fly wing by wing, the condor of the south and the eagle of the north.
What does that mean?
That means that when these two people are going to join, these 2 sacred birds, peace, wisdom, and knowledge was going to come back to us again. And, for example, one of the reasons we are here in the USA is to fulfill that prophecy of the meeting of the condor and the eagle. And the 26th of last month took place that here in Sedona. We have made the sacred dance of the condor and the eagle with the Hopi people. And they made the eagle dance, and we performed the condor dance. And that was not for the public. It was just for us.
Yes.
to fulfill the prophecy of our ancient ones. And the prophecies are the same, basically, for all native peoples around the world.
The Hopi prophecy, is it much like Incan prophecy?
In many ways, most of the prophecies are basically the same. You know, it's the same as the designs that we have in our clothing. The same patterns are more or less the same all over around the world.
But they all talk, all these prophecies, talk of a horrendous time before things become better, before enlightenment.
Yes, that's something that, you know, that all of the prophecies, they have in common. And, you know, while we are talking right now, these prophecies are taking place already.
Yes.
Right now. So So we are not waiting for another 1,000 years. It's happening right now. This big shift, this big change, it's happening in our planet, and it's also affecting humanity in all levels.
You know, Washon, when you were talking about the rainforest and how so many plants are there, plants we haven't even discovered to solve illnesses, as they cut away at the rainforest, as they plow down the areas, what is that doing to our natural medicines?
Well, there's no doubt that there's a lot of destruction. Just 2 months ago, it took place a big genocide right there on the rainforest.
Yeah.
The oil companies are trying to get there, you know, to take all the oil, and they are really destroying the nature, the environment. And so the native peoples have been protesting about it, but they were taken down. And so that's something very sad what's happening. But we know that the universe also will take care of our people.
What do you think, Washon, of current medicine today, where we have pharmaceutical drugs, most of which were created from real plants, and then they, you know, created them in a laboratory? But what do you think of modern medicine today, the kind of medicine that is practiced in the United States?
Well, I feel that modern medicine is losing intuition. And intuition is one of the most important things for a medicine person or for anybody. You know, when you don't have intuition, and then you are losing ground already, you don't know how to help people. Nowadays, you know, everything stays just on the mind. It's like when you go sick with a very simple toothache, and they are going to diagnose cancer for you already. So there's a lot of mistakes that are happening in the hospitals. And I believe it's because of the lack of intuition.
The kind of medicine that you practice, the Incan medicine, basically, has it changed over the hundreds of years, or is it still the same?
Well, specifically these last 20 years, some people have been changing, thinking that they are trying to make it better. But you have to know that our ancient people, they had the concept of perfection because they believe that we are perfect because we are a divine manifestation and God is perfect. And everything that within us also is perfect. So when you see, just looking again at all these amazing monuments, all you see is perfection. So that's the difference from modern world and the ancient way.
How many of us have the capability to do what you do, to be medicine men for ourselves?
You know, I believe that all of us, we have that capacity inside us. All we need is to connect with that side and believe who you are. And in that way, because the basis of medicine is love. And we know that God is the healer, and we are just instruments to channel that love.
Well, Sean, when you get sick, do you go to a medicine man or do you take care of yourself?
I have to take care of myself because in that way also I learn better. And one of the ways also people become to be connected with the medicine is after suffering life-threatening diseases and healing yourself or using the herbs to heal yourself, you really experience yourself how powerful are the medicine plants.
And this this power, this ability to do this, of course, does it drain you, for example? If you are trying to heal someone, do you sometimes get weaker, take on some of their illnesses while they get better?
No. If that's happening like that, it means you are not doing a good job. Because in our training, in the training process, you have to learn, first of all, to protect yourself. So for that, we have a certain kind of seeds that we must wear. They are called guairuros or shuyukus. Or sometimes our trainers, you know, they give us some stones or some herbs that we drink. So in that way, we are going to be always protected from all the energy of the people that we are working with.
Are you still training people now, younger people, to be medicine men?
Of course. For example, my daughter, Siwakente, she has a passion for this. She's always together with me. Right now, she's 10 years old, and I believe that she's just doing great. She really is learning. You know, it's a natural way. You cannot force to no one to become, to be a medicine man or woman.
Yeah.
It's something that's born together with you. It's the same as a painter or as a musician. They cannot become to be. They are already.
Thank you, Washan. Appreciate you being on the program. Fascinating. When we come back, it's time to open up the phone lines. Our special guest will be Jaap van Etten. He's a master of ceremony of the entire Crystal Skulls events. And we'll take your calls. And welcome back to the phone call portion of Coast to Coast AM. I'm George Norrie. Jaap van Etten is the master of ceremonies at the World Mysteries Conference. He will also share his perspective of the place of crystal skulls in human evolution. And now last year, he guided a ceremony called the Calling of the Crystal Skulls. And let's ask him about that. Jaap, how are you?
I'm doing well, George.
Good to have you with us on the program. Tell me about the ceremony, the Calling of the Crystal Skulls. What was that?
Last year we had this conference, and one of the things that we felt when we were preparing for it is there is this legend that crystal skulls have to come together towards the year 2012. And what we felt was it was important to already make a first step for that. So we decided to do a ceremony at the end of the conference, where all the participants and all the crystal skulls would be part of it. And the intent that we were setting was twofold. One was, let more of the crystal skulls that are still hidden somewhere come to the surface. And the other one was, let the crystal skulls come together on a level that hasn't happened before. Well, as you may by now know, at this particular event from the 999, that C.C. Stevens was putting together is exactly that. You know, suddenly we see more crystal skulls coming together than ever. And over the last year, the number of emails that I've received from people who picked up skulls from Tibet, from different other places, is quite astonishing.
Why the current interest in crystal skulls now, Jaap?
Yeah, you know, we have been really pondering on that question. I think that the crystal skulls have always been part of the collective consciousness. And we needed some triggers to really bring that more out into the open. Well, one of the triggers is that we are, in our quest of searching who are we, are more open. And I think what is happening over the last 10 years, the interest of crystal skulls has exponentially increased. If you realize that they carve 10,000 of crystal skulls every year right now, and that people are buying them, you know, all over the world. It's not only in the United States. It's not only in Europe. It's happening in Japan. It's happening in Australia. It's happening in Africa. It's happening literally everywhere.
How do you know you're getting real crystal as opposed to some heavy plastic?
That's a very good question you're asking. Well, I think that it's in the first place, it's very important to make sure that when you begin and do not have much of experience, that you let yourself be guided by people who really have a good name in the business. You know, there are a number of people who sell crystal skulls who will never, ever sell any fake. But as soon as you go in on the internet and do not have enough experience, there is always the risk that you buy something that is not really crystal. And if you do not have experience, ask somebody else, is my suggestion. Because there are quite some fake ones out, to be really honest.
You know, we've been talking about the 13 crystal skulls that seems to be all over the place, that, you know, the of the ancient ones, if some of them are real, if they're all real.
Uh-huh.
But a lot of people have been saying tonight there are 52 crystal skulls. What do you think?
Well, the 52, there are two people who came up with the number of 52. One was one of the high priests of the Mayan, Don Alejandro. And the other one is the person you're just talking to. In my book, I was one of the first who really was willing to say, I don't believe there are 13, I believe there are 52. But here comes the difficulty of all the stories. Realize everything is stories. We do not have proof of most of the stories. A lot of it is you believe it, you resonate with it or not. We do not know for sure whether there are 13, and we do not know for sure whether there are 52. There are all kinds of stories and legends, and what we do is we put together the different things that we resonate with and say, that's the story I'll bring out. That's the story right now I can support. But do we know that as a proof? No, we don't.
Okay, as promised, let's go to the phones now. We're going to go to Dayton, Ohio on the wild card line. Angelic, you're up with us. Hi there.
Hi.
Welcome to the show. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you. I was wondering, is the power in the shape of a skeleton per se, or can it be a piece of pure crystal that's not shaped like a skeleton?
Now, that's a good question. Yup, what do you think? Does it have to be a crystal skull? It could it be a triangle or anything else? I have on my desk right now a pyramid that was given to me by a friend of mine in St. Louis. It's all crystal. It's gorgeous. Would that work the same?
Well, personally, I don't believe so.
It's got to be a skull.
It's got to be a skull.
How come?
Well, crystal in and of itself has a tremendous amount of energies and power.
Right.
And I think we do not have to...
Whether it's a triangle, a skull, or what it's got.
It doesn't matter.
Right.
So we have the crystalline, let's say, qualities, depending on where it's made from, the type of material. And the shapes in general are the ones that help us to connect to that what we really are loving or liking. You know, you carve it in the form of a dolphin, and it helps people to connect to the dolphins. And as such, it works. And because it's crystal, it will obviously support, you can say, your connection with. Because it's one of the qualities of crystals is that they are transmitters and attuners, so they help us to attune to the different things. So in that sense, every type of form is working. And there is something very interesting with crystal skulls. And the only way to explain it is by saying that the matrix, you can say the initial intent with which crystal skulls were carved was to store, according to the legend, specific information. And as a consequence, that particular energy of the original information makes that we tap into, you can call it a subfield of the collective crystals field, if you want, and that field is in vibration different than the normal crystal.
Next up, San Diego we go. Jerry, west of the Rockies. Go ahead, Jerry.
Yes, I have a question for your guest, please.
Okay.
I purchased a crystal skull from Southwest Import in San Diego here.
Okay, how much did you have to pay, if I can ask, Jerry?
This one I paid $35 for.
All right.
And I had gone over to look at some. I'd been meaning to go for a long time, and I finally something spurred me to go over. And I was looking at the tray that they had in the back that she brought it out. And I had one that I was looking at, and she raised this was a Native American lady. And she brought one that she'd been holding by her side up, and she said, "What do you think of this?" And I just, that was it. And it's about 2.5 inches long, about 1.5 inches high, and 1.5 inches wide. Very well carved. Indentations in the temple areas. But what got me to get this was the entire top of this skull is what you're familiar with rainbow crystal, right?
I am. How about you? Yeah.
Yeah. The entire top of this is nothing but rainbow crystal.
Uh huh.
And I'm just wondering. I still haven't figured out how why I have this, really, because the quartz itself is semi clear, but it looks like, you know, spider webs throughout the whole part of the crystal here, the skull.
Uh-huh.
It's very well carved, very well. I don't know. It's just something I had to have that crystal, and I've had it here, and I meditate with it, and I've had some kind of special dreams, and I don't know how to use it really.
Well, I think you're already pretty well indicating why what you are supposed to do with it. The interesting thing is that, and this is a story you will hear from many, many, many people, once you buy a crystal skull, you realize that the reason that you were attracted to it, because in one way or another, you're resonating with it. And I think that's the best term, the resonating. There's something in that crystal that is resonating with you, and that's exactly as you so beautifully described. That's why you needed to have it. You needed to buy it. This is a story that you hear from many, many people. And then all the other things are, you can say, secondary. The primary thing is feeling attracted to, which means it is a vibration that in one way or another can support you on, and then as the beautiful term is, on your journey to become who you are, awakening things, whatever you want to use as a term. But the main thing is the resonance. And then the meditation with it allows you to make a deeper connection with it and to allow that initial resonance to expand. And where it will lead you to, that's the journey that you are on.
It somehow taps into some universal force. I'm convinced of that, yeah. How about you?
No, I agree with you. You know, it's the universal force is what we call consciousness, right?
True.
So there's a beautiful saying that may help to understand that. If, you know, the creator going down in vibration to express himself or itself on many different levels, the last step before physical form was what they call electromagnetic energies. And the most pure form of electromagnetic energies, in other words, the most pure form in physical reality that we can find here is crystal.
Do you know if anything has happened to people with crystal skulls in a bad way if they've had these?
I've never heard of it. You know, I'm not saying it's impossible, but and maybe I don't want to attract that in my reality, but I've never heard it, no. And the only thing that I hear is enthusiasm. I hear positive stories. I get an increasing number of people in the different groups that are only telling wonderful stories of what's happening. And none of them is referring in a negative way to people they know that had negative experiences. So I'm not saying that doesn't happen, but it's not something that I'm aware of, no.
If somebody had a crystal skull as a keychain and it was an authentic crystal, would that still possess powers?
Every crystal, as you know, has, of course, a certain energy field.
Sure.
But we also know that the only way to truly tap into knowledge and information is by connecting with it. We are the one who are determining to what degree that particular crystal or crystal skull is active and to what degree and to what power the field that it is radiating will have an effect on us and on our environment. So we are still the ones in charge. We are determining to what degree it will be, yeah, you can say active. That's the best way to put it.
All right, let's go to Brian, Longview, Texas, wildcard line. Brian, go ahead.
Thanks for taking my call, George.
Sure
I just
thing.
The crystal skull thing is idol worship. It's plain and simple, and the Bible warns specifically against it. And I think everybody that is involved when it is in trouble, and they need to seek the Lord for their answers and not these crystal skulls. It's freaking me out.
Well, let's get your reaction to that. All right. Thank you, Brian.
Yeah, I understand, and you are not the only one who is really challenged by the form, because in our, you know, say, collective consciousness of the Western culture, it is associated with death.
Is it like a false god? A
no.
skull?
No, that's not what how I look at it.
Okay.
It is a form of, you can say, death in the sense of, yeah, as soon as we die, what's left over is a skull. But that's not what the reason is why the form of a skull has been selected. It is the one that holds our brain. It reminds us that we have brains that process information. So we know that crystal, by definition, is storing information. So if the ancient crystal skulls are truly holding information, but even modern skulls are holding information, the only way to learn to access it and process it is by using the brain. So the form is helping us to remind us that we can process information. And I think that's the true meaning of why the form is the way it is.
Years ago, I heard a story about Atlantis, in that they may have possessed a huge crystal for using as almost like a laser weapon. And when Atlantis would go underwater, when it sank, the crystal went with it. And that is what has caused some of the problems in the Bermuda Triangle. Have you ever heard that?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a story that more people believe. Some people say that the crystal in and of itself, due to the way it was activated, created a vortex. And that what they really were trying to do is to see whether they could manipulate space and time. And that that vortex is some kind of a space-time disturbance that literally makes sometimes objects disappear. So it's a beautiful story. We don't know for sure, but it could very well be possible, yeah.
How do you recommend people meditate with a skull? What do they do?
Well, meditation in general is a way to stop the normal thinking, and so that we can connect on a deeper level and also can access what we call the subconsciousness and maybe even higher consciousness. So that's one way of doing that. And we use then the crystal skulls often as a point of focus to help us to go in that meditative state so that we can then experience whatever we then experience. You know, if we really want to use that as a tool for meditation, that's the way to do it. If you want to learn to work with crystal skulls, we can do activations. Activation means we use the potential power in the most optimal way. And one way to do that is by setting an intent. But what a far more powerful way is to open our hearts and really connect with it, becoming one with it so that we share the vibrations and then can really explore what that particular crystal skull or that particular crystal has to tell and to share with us.
Why do you think these skulls have been found primarily around South America, Central America, in Mexico? Why there?
Well, initially, that's what happened. Most of the what we call ancient crystal skulls come from that particular area, and some people say the only reason to explain that is because that people after Atlantis was destroyed, where some people believe they came from, were moving to that part of the world. But the interesting thing, as I mentioned already in the beginning, that we see many new crystal skulls appearing, and most of them come from Tibet. So right now we see that also at the other end of the world, crystal skulls were used, were carved. They were carved in Nepal and in Tibet, some of them, and in China, of course. And some of them are claimed to be very old. We don't know exactly, again, the age, as we don't know how to really determine the age. But definitely, there are crystal skulls also in other parts of the world.
Let's get a call. John from Missoula, Montana. Go ahead, John.
Hi, George.
Hi.
Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Great.
Hey, matter of fact, we're about only 30 days apart, right to the date. I've been digging crystals for over 45 years. I do a lot of crystal healing and stuff. And I really, you know, once you carve a crystal, you know, it's still a crystal, but they lose something in it, you know.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, a crystal will take on negative energy and it has to be cleaned. And, you know, it... I do.
Does it ever wear out, John? Can a crystal skull take on too much, and then it's just not good anymore?
No, it can take on negative energy, and it will always be good. You just need to clean it.
And what do you mean by clean it?
Fresh water without any chlorine, sea salt solution,
okay.
Natural stream, sunlight.
And they work. They work for you.
Hidden away.
They work for you.
Oh, they work, yes. I've dug crystals all over the United States. I've got crystals from all over the world. I've dug them to the size of a gallon fruit jar, matter of fact. I got a natural field, you know, and we get a lot of smoky quartz just a few miles from where I live. And I've dug hundreds of crystals on a weekend, you know. And if you feel the energy, you know, and I've left them lay if they didn't feel right. I give them back to Mother Earth.
Great. And, Yop, where's the World Mysteries Conference?
Oh, that will be in Tempe. Well, this is near Phoenix in Arizona. Yes.
Super. And your website, of course, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Thank you, Yop. Appreciate you being on the program.